Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
All right, welcome back to Whiskey Congress. Another whiskey, one I've never had before. I've never even had anything from this distillery before. Port Charlotte Scotch. This is the Scottish Barley Heavily Peated Scotch. It lives up to its name. It is very heavily peated. It's on the nose. It's like in your face how much peat there is, which is right up my alley when it comes to whiskey. So I love it. It's not going to overtake Lagavulin because it doesn't have any smoke. Or doesn't have much smoke.
Go ahead.
Anyway, a lot of peat, really good flavor. It's 50% alcohol, so it's got a lot. It's got the good kind of burn. Like, you feel it. It warms you up going down, but it doesn't, like, offend you on the tongue as you taste it. That might have sounded weird. I gave it a 92.
So we're actually both right in the same. Like, I gave it a 92 as well. I'm a big fan of Port Charlotte in specifically this particular offering. It's strong. It's got the flavor. And it's not at a bad price point either.
It was $70 roughly.
Right. And
not cheap, but not,
it's not
but
cheap,
it's not $150.
I mean, we're in the world of Scotch.
Right.
So Scotch are going to pay a little bit more for it. And I think this is one where with the ABV at 50%, with the flavor, which to me,
super peaty. Oh,
right.
My goodness.
I mean, that's just that. And so you say there's not a lot of smoke, which is interesting to me, because I think that there is a fair amount of smoke, but it's not.
The peat overpowers it, I think.
Right. They balance each other out. And some people will sit there and say, well, if it's peaty, then that means it has to be smoky. And that's not necessarily true. Peat and smoke are two different things, although I think that they often kind of get confused as the same thing.
And another thing I'll say about it, and this is kind of a weird word to use, but it's very salty.
No, it's not. That's actually not a weird. I think that hits right on the head.
And that also right up my alley. This is a solid quality whiskey. 92, I might even have wanted to kick it up a notch, but I'm happy with 92, and we ended up on the same page. So there's your whiskey for the week. For those of you watching us on YouTube and waiting for the rest of the show, we got to get into politics. We can't help ourselves there. You want to give us a run through?
Yeah. I mean, so some of the things that we're going to talk about, CNN and this whole issue with fake news and where they're at with their story regarding the whole Russia Trump Tower meeting. We're going to talk a little bit about school shootings. There was a report that came out on NPR that was eye-opening, to say the least. We'll talk a little bit. Ron DeSantis running for governor in Florida.
Right.
Is he racist? Is he not? I don't know.
Yes,
probably
you do.
He is. A little bit about the Catholic Church.
Yes.
The Catholic Church. And we have, the numbers came back on Hurricane Maria on the number of lives that were taken and impacted by that terrible situation in Puerto Rico. Then there's Roy Oliver and Jordan Edwards. Roy Oliver was a police officer down in Dallas who shot and killed Jordan Edwards as he and his friends and his brother were leaving a party. And then we'll get into some sports stuff. The Williams sisters,
right,
playing each other. Their first time playing each other since Serena was pregnant. And we'll do a little bit of an NFL preview.
We kind of have to, right?
Yeah, we absolutely have
next,
to.
Next week. All right.
I got fantasy drafts going on left and right. There's a lot going on in the NFL. We're not turning our backs on the NFL because of one reason or another. So if you're one of those people, then you need to listen to our show. Stop being an annoying snowflake and just enjoy the NFL for what it is, right? Put your politics aside.
Agreed.
And so that's what we'll get into. Right now,
let's roll. Okay, so the first story is something that you brought to my attention, and that was CNN's reporting.
Yeah, so CNN probably about a month ago had
Carl Bernstein
had reported, and the reporter was Carl Bernstein, who of Watergate fame, reported that Trump knew about the meeting in Trump Tower with the Russian official that turned out to be something about adoptions, but it was initially supposed to be about, you know, getting dirt on Hillary and this whole, you know, that's where a lot of the collusion stuff is coming from. So Carl Bernstein puts out a report that Trump himself knew about this meeting beforehand. And why that's important is because Trump said he didn't know, Donald Trump, the president, said he didn't know about said meeting. And it was Manafort and Flynn and Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka's husband, Jared Kushner. Yep. It was all them. And so with an idea that Trump, if it were true that Trump actually knew about this and tasked them with, hey, go find out what you can, then all of a sudden this whole Russian collusion thing starts to get a little bit of momentum.
All right.
Right? Because now, okay, if they set up a meeting in Trump Tower to talk about, you know, ways in which the Russians could help Trump win an election, and Trump said, in return, I can do XYZ for you. Now you've got conspiracy to throw an election, and now there's some teeth to this. Now, right. I don't know that didn't happen, but we don't have proof of it right now. And what we also don't have is an actual story, because that story that Carl Bernstein put out wasn't true. And this is kind of what happened.
Explain
here.
That, because you brought this up to my attention.
So what happened was Bernstein gets all this information. In the story, he doesn't say who his source is. And he quotes Michael Cohen's lawyer. Michael Cohen is Trump's former lawyer, also a.k.a. his fixer. But in the story, Lanny Davis is quoted as having no comment. Right.
And Lanny Davis is
Michael Cohen's lawyer. Michael Cohen, like I just said, was Donald Trump's former lawyer / fixer. So all this comes out, and then now we have Michael Cohen, who has been brought up on charges, who is pled out, and everything with him is now public, right? So you go through the public records, and we come to find out that Michael Cohen is saying that he actually doesn't know much about the whole meeting in Trump Tower, other than that it happened, and he can't really testify. Like, so he doesn't know anything about it. He can't testify anything. He can't testify to Trump knowing or not knowing. He doesn't know anything about it. And we also come to find out that Lanny Davis, who is Michael Cohen's lawyer, was Carl Bernstein's source for his story, his bombshell story that he puts out, saying that Trump knew about this whole meeting. Right. And then Lanny Davis backtracked in this is record. This is on record from interviews with Michael Cohen's whole trial, where Lanny Davis said that he was the source and what he said wasn't true and or accurate.
So he told Carl Bernstein stuff that just was not true. Mm-hmm. And Carl Bernstein reported it. Mm-hmm. And then he backtracks on it. And CNN
Lanny Davis didn't backtrack on it until his client,
Michael Cohen
got himself in trouble and ended up, you know, having to, you know, basically give up his soul, you know, so he didn't end up in jail for an extended period of time and to save his family a trial and all that other stuff. And so we come to find out through all of that Lanny Davis just fed Carl Bernstein a bunch of shit, and then Carl Bernstein put it out as a story, and now Carl Bernstein won't pull back the story, won't retract it, won't say, well, in light of new information, none of that was accurate. Please disregard. I don't care if you put it on the back page or it ends up on, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. You have to come out with some sort of a formal statement acknowledging that you got duped.
Yeah.
And they're not. And so the problem is that when Trump sits there and says, oh, fake news, CNN, you're so phony, you're so fake. All they do is lie. They refuse to tell the good stuff, right? All that stuff. You want to sit there, like, we want to sit there and call Trump out for that, but the problem is we can't, because he's right. CNN is wrong here, right? One, Carl Bernstein should be fired. And that's based off the precedent that CNN set from last year when you had a bunch of reporters who ran with the story, who didn't vet their sources, and they came out to be false, so they fired all those reporters.
Dan Rather lost his job.
Right, Dan Rather lost his job.
Because he posted something that may have been true, but was not properly
wasn't
documented.
Properly vetted. And so now we have another situation where, and this one, listen, you got duped by a source. It happens. Whether you're Carl Bernstein or you're an up-and-coming reporter, you know what you do? You say, you know what? I was wrong. It wasn't true. You retract it. You apologize. You move on. He's not. And CNN, by not firing him and everyone involved with it, or at least...
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to fire him necessarily.
Well, there's got to be...
I don't think does he work for CNN or is he a contributor? Like, they bring him in.
No, I think he works for them.
Okay, I didn't know that.
So either way, like, there needs to be...
They need to own it.
They need to own it completely. They need to retract the story. And there needs to be some sort of a public sort of... You're loving this, aren't you?
It's smokier than... This whiskey is smokier than I was giving it credit for.
There you go.
It's really kicking in. Sorry.
That's all right. But
you have to watch that moment of me going, this is fucking good whiskey.
Giving it a good sniff. We're still talking about whiskey.
Yes. All right.
So the
bigger picture is that Trump says fake news, and you and I both agree that, I think we both agree that criticizing a fair and free media is a dangerous thing, but it's equally dangerous when the media fucks up like this and won't own it.
Right. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of... Did you ever watch the show The Shield?
I did not.
Okay.
I've been told I look like one of the guys on The Shield.
Michael Chiklis. Right. I mean, but that's just a stand. You're bald, you're white, so thick, yeah. But in the show The Shield, you had a bunch of dirty cops who were, for the most part, doing good, but they did a lot of shady shit. And then you had Forrest Whitaker, who played the internal affairs agent who came in and was investigating them. And he, in turn, knew everything that they were doing. He knew that they were dirty. Like, he knew it in his soul, and he had proof. But they were really good at kind of covering their tracks, and he couldn't do... He could never make the connection. So then he himself did something that was dirty to prove that they were dirty. And all that ended up doing was it landed him in jail, right?
Okay.
And so what we have with CNN is... Damn it, Trump, we know that you're dirty and we know that you colluded with Russia and we know that you're a racist and blah, 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 blah. And they continue to put out these shit stories that anyone says they have anything on Trump, they will run with it without looking. And then it turns out to be false or not accurate. And now they end up holding the bag. They're trying to be the good internal investigator. The internal affairs investigator, and they end up just holding the bag in jail themselves because they're not following the process. They're not sticking to their actual principles, and going and using the process that's laid out for them, right? Like, I mean,
so one of the many flaws in the media is they. You've used the term infotainment many times on the show, and that's a perfect word. And when they fuck up, they often retract, but the retraction, like you said, is, you know, 20 pages deep or 20 articles deep. But at least it's there.
Right.
At least if I say, you know, Trump, you know, murdered a hooker in the middle of Times Square because he said he could do it and not lose a vote, and you say, well, no, that's not true at all, and I have to come back later and say, okay, that's not true. If someone then quotes me and says, you know, based on Jim from Whiskey Congress, this happened, you can eventually find me saying, okay, I was wrong about that. So even if it isn't prevalent, it's at least on the record.
Right.
And that's where there's a failure by Carl Bernstein.
By Carl Bernstein and
by
CNN.
CNN. Absolutely.
They both, at some point, like, and it should have been almost as soon as it becomes public knowledge that Lanny Davis was the source and Lanny Davis has admitted to saying, you know what, wasn't accurate. I was just throwing it out there. It was red herring, whatever. Then you have to pull your story, right? Like, you have to pull it.
Right.
You have to write a retraction. You have to say, and you have to put out some long, whole self-aggrandizing thing where we hold ourselves to the highest standards. And
yes.
And sometimes we
even
get fooled.
Even if it's phony,
and,
even right, it's phony,
you
at least
have
it's
to
there.
Do it.
It's on the record.
You have to do it. But now you're not doing it, and you get beat up by Trump. And he sends out these tweets, and you think it doesn't have an impact, but it does, because it gives It's one more brick in his wall of trust that he's
fake media, yeah.
Of the fake wall news. Of trust that he's building with his people, right? The people who follow him, no matter what, blindly, like he could literally kill said hooker in said Times Square, and they'll follow him to like this is building that trust in them, and that's on the media, right? Like
yes,
you didn't have to like one. You should have vetted that story. And as soon as you found out that it wasn't true, you have to pull said story and you have to own that you fucked up. But by not doing so, and Carl Bernstein standing strongly by his story, even though right. a big chunk of it isn't true, then your credibility is shot. And how can I trust you as a media source at that point?
Yeah.
As a news source, how can I trust you?
You know, I'm a huge Carl Bernstein fan. I like Woodward. Bernstein. I love that story. The Watergate story.
I mean,
is such
it's
an
a great
story.
I'm neutral. I mean, I honestly, I didn't even know he fucking worked for CNN, to be honest with you.
I didn't think he did. I thought he was like an independent contributor.
I didn't know. I would have assumed he retired and was writing books on living in a cabin and looking at squirrels. I didn't know. I didn't know he was still. I honestly didn't. I had no idea.
Because
part of the reason is I had kind of passed on. Like, I CNN is. Obviously anti-Trump,
right?
And listening to Don Lemon and Cuomo and all those guys, like, you know what? And it's not my issue isn't that they criticize Trump. It's the way in which they do it. It's all subjective. It's all opinion. Like there's plenty of shit that Trump is doing where it should be brought into question. But that's not what they're doing. They're not looking at the actual policy. They're worried about his fucking tweets.
Right,
you know they're worried about his demeanor.
Which annoy me too.
Right, I mean, which is fine.
CNN worthy.
There's a difference between being annoyed by Twitter and actual policy, right? If you want to say this is where Trump is bad for the country, then look at what he's doing to the EPA. Look at what he's doing to the
NAFTA.
The trade agreement is interesting when you actually look at it, because there's only like three cars made in Mexico where this would really fully impact them, right? And they're cars that aren't sold in the United States, right? Like, so it sounds like a really good deal, but it's not. Like, when you actually look at the detail, but hold on. Anyway, that's a whole other thing.
Let's not derail.
Yeah, we won't get into that. But, you know, if you want to attack Trump, then you have to go to specific policies, right? Because any person that's looking at, like, because you can sit there, if you're going to attack him on his character, his demeanor, the prostitutes, but the playmates and the porn stars and whatever. If you're going to
attack prostitutes too,
if you're going to attack him on that, if you're someone who defends Trump, you can do that shit all day like a fucking Jedi, right? Like, I mean, you can sit there and bat that shit back around, and that's what all these people do on conservative radio, your Rush Limbaughs and your Wilkows and your Levins and all those. That's what these guys, they're like, listen, you're sitting there throwing this bullshit at me. I can fucking swat that shit away all day, and they rightfully should. And they're right.
Yeah. It hurts overall credibility.
It does. It does. But people get to, oh my God, he tweeted this, he said this, he blah, 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 blah. It's the policies, people. He's attacking the EPA and the environment. He's making it so that corporations and manufacturing can do whatever the fuck they want. And who will it impact the most? Poor people and brown people. That's who it's going to impact, right? Because they're not going to throw a manufacturing plant up in Rocky River in the suburbs. Where are they going to throw it, right? They're going to put it in right in the center of Cleveland, right where everything else is, where you have families and you have shitty schools and it's filled with mostly, you know, black and Latino and non-white people, and that's where that shit is going to have the most negative impact, right? Like, that's where that's where those sort of things are going to come into play. And then you want to also talk about, you know, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. They've stripped that agency of any power, of any teeth, of any usefulness, and we're essentially looking at that agency being gone and eradicated and banks going back to being able to do whatever the fuck they want to do. You know, I'm sure Wells Fargo is pissed that they got caught when they got caught, because, you know, if that could have waited itself out a little bit longer, no one would have given a shit.
Right?
They wouldn't have had to put those commercials out talking about, hey, We let you down.
We screwed you all over, but
we're back. Right? You know what I mean? Like, all that they might have been able to surpass that with Trump. And then you look even in the Department of Justice and, you know, how they view civil rights and how, like, all of that is changing. Those are the sort of policies where those are the areas where you should be attacking Trump. His tweets and everything else are fucking meaningless, and they're a waste of time, and they're a waste of fucking air. You know, this whole thing with CNN and even the Washington Post and Huffington Post and all that other stuff, they're missing the boat.
I agree. There's we could go on that for hours, and we won't benefit. You sent me another quote unquote fake news story that the number of school shootings that have occurred this year was published multiple places, and NPR, hardly a right wing,
exactly. Yeah,
went out and said we tried to follow up on these school shootings, and a lot of them were fake.
So if you go look, other than NPR, if you go and you look number of school shootings, I guess prior to last week, because I don't know how well this caught on, it was in the mid 200s. You know, from 2016, right?
I thought it was 400 and some.
There were like 256 school shootings in 2016 or 17.
Oh, okay.
Or
something along those lines. In that year, okay.
And, you know, I mean, that's a crazy
number. It's a lot. Right? It's way too many.
Now, I mean, it's way too many. But, I mean, if you also think about it, there are how many thousands and thousands of schools. So, but even still, 256 school shootings is way too many when you're talking about high school kids, elementary school kids. You know, we've seen, we have so many from Columbine all the way up to Parkland to everything else. Like, we've seen the devastation that it causes. It's a terrible thing when it happens. And the idea that there were 256 of them that happened in a single year was mind-blowing. And all the kids from Parkland are out there, and they're starting marches, and they're doing this whole thing. And NPR comes out and says, yeah, well, the only thing is, instead of 256, we were able to verify 11.
Now, that's not that's what they were able to verify. Now, in fairness, they had a lot of non-return calls.
Right.
So the total number that actually happened, we don't know. But there were several. I mean, like, it seemed like almost half that were reported, and the school that was reported was told, no, that's not accurate.
Right.
And there is
but
some...
But what we know is that the number is significantly smaller than what was reported. And so...
Again, I call fake news... You point to things like this, and it works.
Well, it's not necessarily, this isn't necessarily the media's fault, right? This is, like, because those statistics were, everyone was pulling that number from a government agency, and I don't remember the specific agency that's tracking this. I don't know if it's the Department of Education or some other agency.
Or ATF.
No, but it's somebody.
I don't know what it was. It was crazy.
Right, but somebody. But it was a government agency that was tracking this, right? And what they would do is they would call or they sent out a survey to every school, and you know there were certain questions and there were issues with the survey. Like, you put this question and this question back to back, and it said this and that, and those are similar things, and blah blah blah, yada yada yada. But my issue is that it's not necessarily with the media, because the media went to the same source for the information. The source was the government. The government put out a survey. The schools did a shitty job of answering said survey, and we come back with these numbers, right? I mean, because
a school shooting meant a gun discharged in a school, necessarily like a
right.
A
I mean, and
event.
These schools are
and it's so terrible.
Well, hold on, these schools are literally saying, oh, Timmy brought a gun in the school and it was stopped or it was thwarted or someone mentioned something. And they were checking yes, even if nothing actually happened. Maybe it was a rumor. Maybe there was, maybe someone did bring a gun, but there wasn't an actual shooting.
Incident, okay.
And that actually, that matters. Again, words matter. So we have these skewed numbers that come out and they get reported by USA Today, Huffington Post, Washington Post, CNN. Everyone's reporting 256 school shootings, and what are we going to do? Mass shootings everywhere. You know, there's one happening every other day, and blah blah blah, yada yada. Come to find out, from what they could verify, we don't know. It was 11, and you had the schools that didn't report any, who never returned calls or what have you. In Cleveland, actually, if you read through the whole article, Cleveland was an issue because there were a number of issues reported in Cleveland that were allegedly, supposedly not accurate. You know, like Cleveland was one of the biggest
false reporters.
Based off of this survey, because they were any incident with a gun where someone walked in and they got caught in the metal detectors, because, you know, the schools here have them. Any sort of incident with a gun was marked as a school shooting. Now, some people say, fact that the kid even brought it, it should be
fucked up.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's something, but it's still not an actual school shooting. And if we're going to be honest about this, then we need to be honest about what's actually happening. Right. And so it does matter. Right. Now, if you want to sit there and say 11 is too many, I won't argue with you.
Right.
I won't argue that point with you. But what I will say, there's a huge difference between 256 and 11. Right? I just feel like there's a huge difference.
And again, with all the influence the NRA has, and we've gone over on the show many times, I am not a fan of the NRA, and I am a former member of the NRA. But this is a false news story or a poorly reported news story, let's leave it at that, that hurts the greater narrative, right? It's hard to be taken seriously when you say something that is easily disputable, if not flat out easy to disregard.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna, like, you can't put information out there that's not true,
right?
Right. I mean, that's
not
the issue.
You want to be credible media.
Right. As a media outlet, you want me to take you serious? Then when you put information out there to be consumed as news.
I mean, I'm the first one in the world to mock a Rush Limbaugh or an Alex Jones, and I will continue to do so because they're clowns. But when quote-unquote legitimate news sources fuck up, they lose credibility, and they should be exposed for that.
And there's a broader problem here. The government entity or agency that put the survey out, they've got to do better quality control over this survey, right? Like, this data is being used on so many different levels, right? Like, I mean, there are government resources that are based off of this type of data, right? Like, it's like, oh, well, this, like, Cleveland's got, they had 50 school shootings, so we have to put, they need more resource officers, right. They need more metal detectors, they need all, like, you know, money is being spent based off of these type of reports and this type of information that's being provided to the federal government, so they need a better quality control check on this type of information. You cannot just put out a shitty paper survey or email a survey to a school and say, fill this out, and based on this, we'll do X, Y, and Z, and have it there be no sort of check on it other than we sent it out, they sent it back, that's it. Right?
Agreed.
If, like, no other, in the corporate world, you wouldn't rely on, like, you're not going to make, you know, multi-million, billion-dollar decisions on a survey that you sent out to somebody, you know, that you sent to a secretary in Youngstown, you know, or East Cleveland, and then they send it back to you and say, all right, well, based off of this, we will decide funding and, you know, resources and blah, 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 yada, 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 right? Like, you're going to do more to try to figure it out. And I get the scale. You got a ton of schools. You've got...
It's a countrywide thing.
Right. So. Like, you've got thousands and thousands of schools, so you've got to figure it out, but you're the federal government. Like, it's your, like, you hire smart people to figure it out.
Or do they? All right. So, speaking of not so smart people, we got Ron DeSantis down in Florida running for governor. He is running against a very left wing, I forget the name of his opponent, but his opponent, the one, the Democratic primary, is very left wing. So, this is basically a showdown of Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker proportions. It's like the Empire versus the Rebellion. And DeSantis said something about...
Andrew Gillum is his opponent. Is his opponent. Andrew Gillum is a black, very far left Democrat who's, you know, running against Ron DeSantis, who is a very white, far right Republican. And, you know, DeSantis comes out during a media appearance and says, you know, that the citizens of Florida shouldn't monkey up the election. and let a guy like Andrew Gillum into the White House. Into the State House in Florida. And I've got mixed feelings about it because,
I mean, every time the word monkey gets thrown out there, it's what's the context, right?
Right.
And this feels shitty to me.
I don't know, man. It's hard to, because it's hard to gauge intent, right? Sure. So, you know, plenty of people have said, let's not monkey around. I mean, it's monkeying around. I mean, the whole thought, I mean, Curious George was a monkey and people, I don't know. I'm caught between, are we being too hypersensitive or is this guy really an asshole? And it's hard to tell because he seems like he's got great asshole potential.
He definitely has great asshole.
Right, potential. like the potential is there for him to be a racist prick. I can see it, I can feel it. But at the same time, I want to be fair and say, did he just throw a phrase out there in the heat of a moment? Not even, like, it wasn't racial. The guy was just saying, hey, let's, people who think like I do, right? The problem is, though, like, people are so siloed and divided in their thought process that you have a group of people out there who are just sitting and waiting for something to sound and feel
to get outraged, they're
looking for a reason to be outraged, so they're looking for a reason to pounce. And this guy, your opponent's black and you said monkey, you racist motherfucker, right? I mean,
I'm with you. I think there is a gray area to be figured out here, because there are people there. A lot of what's hurting us as a country and as a society today is hypersensitivity. And as soon as someone says anything that gives us any reason to be outraged, pounce on it and just go nuts and focus on it.
I mean, we have a term, it's called microaggression. Like people like,
right.
Microaggressions, right? Like that is a micro, you said this and you didn't realize you said it, but it was totally anti this or that, and it really offended me, and so therefore I am going to go on a hunger strike in my room, and if I die, my parents are going to be able to sue you because I've said micro. It's fucking crazy.
That is definitely a legit thing that we need to check as a country, because in the world there are literally countries that are in constant violent conflict, and we're worried about microaggressions.
Right.
And we're gonna
first world problems, yo.
Yeah, exactly. And it's damaging us in our international credibility and a bunch of other ways.
If you sit in a college classroom and let a professor or a very, you know, woke progressive student explain it to you, then in theory you're just like, yeah, totally. This is the fall of humanity, right? Like, I mean, if I've sat in those rooms and I've been around those groups of people, and it's easy to see, like, you follow it, but at the same time, toughen the fuck up, buttercup, right? Like, a professor, you being in an English class and reading a book about slavery, the class is predominantly white, and we read a book about slavery, and I felt very uncomfortable. Okay, so... to make you feel better, you don't want your white classmates to hear about slavery because it's a poor, or do you need to be removed from the room? Like, how the fuck do you want to solve it, right? Like, those are the type of things that they're saying are microaggressions, right? Right. It's just like, well, having to hear about slavery, and I'm the only white black person in the class, right? Like, so, all right, then go to a fucking historically black college then, right? Like, I mean, and then you go figure it out that way, right? Go self-segregate yourself. That's what it is. Go self-segregate yourself, and then go learn it however the fuck you want to learn it, right? I mean, I don't know what the fuck else to tell you. So you have these microaggressions, but the problem is you've got this Ron DeSantis guy who, you know, his Facebook profile was tied to a Tea Party profile on Facebook that had some pretty shitty standard GOP racist, you know, comments, memes, posts, and all that other shit in it. And, you know, so he gets tied to it immediately. Oh, well, I didn't know. I was added as an admin and no one told me and I didn't know. I'm not, none of this is how I think.
Did he denounce anything, though?
Well, all he said was, I didn't know.
That's not denouncing.
Right. And again, words matter. So he didn't denounce anything, but he did say he didn't know that he was an admin of this group. And had he known, he wouldn't have been a part of it. Blah, 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 yada, yada.
That is not particularly...
It's not necessarily particularly convincing. So that's why I can't dismiss this as a guy used a phrase and we're turning it on him just because he used the wrong particular animal.
Right.
But at the same time...
You don't want to overreact because you don't want
to... I don't want to overreact, but at the same time, I'm not going to let this guy off the hook because there's some red flags there.
Let's put it this way. Come November, when this race, or October, when this race really heats up, we will probably get the answer to this on our own. When he's doing ad campaigns, if he is doing what I anticipate, which is scare white people into thinking that they're being marginalized, attacked, whatever.
I mean, that's the GOP's standard.
That's
their standard across the board.
Has it not gotten worse, though? Maybe I'm just getting older and crabbier, but it seems to me like the card that they play now is if you're white, you're under attack.
Yes.
And maybe that's been around for longer than I'm giving it credit for.
It's been around for a while, I think.
I think it's got worse. Has it got worse?
I mean, I think it's the same strategy McCain used when he was going up against Obama.
I disagree.
Because the answer to your question is yes, it's gotten progressively worse, but it's the same sort of strategy, right? I mean, McCain himself may have been this upstanding guy who, when they called Obama an Arab, you know, McCain's just like, no, he's not an Arab, you know, he's not a Muslim or whatever.
Right.
He's a fine, Arab. Upstanding gentleman, and blah, 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 yada, yada. Okay. But I still think that if you go back and you look at that campaign, there were some let's scare the white people into voting for us tactics that were used.
I don't think by McCain. I think
it was by his team.
Campaign management. Yep.
Okay. Right. By his team. And if you're a campaign manager, which, you know, other than NFL GM, that's my dream job.
Right. Right.
Big campaign manager. You use the tactics that work, right? And you either you have a moral compass or you don't, right? And most campaign managers, their job, they get paid to get people elected, which means you got to punt on the moral compass, right? Now, if that's my job, I'm going to do what my job requires me to do, right? In that particular instance, right? So, I mean, it sucks, but that, you know, manipulating people, like your whole job is to figure out how do you manipulate people to vote for you, right? And it's kind of slimy, it's kind of sleazy, but that's what it is, and that's what his campaign did. He signed off on it, so there's that has to kind of hang over his head. But it's not new to the arena. Shit, this shit started with Reagan.
It started with Nixon.
It really started with Nixon, to a degree, and. I think it's been used relatively consistently from Nixon all the way through.
Probably true. And speaking of moral compasses and dealing with that, I've had a really tough go of things morally and socially because of the scandals in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with my cousin I was best man at his wedding. We're very close. We don't talk as much as we used to. And I told him recently...
We don't even talk anymore.
Do you need to do that? Okay.
Sorry.
You're not. And I told him I've stopped going to church because I'm kind of in a weird state of mind with religion and its influence on politics. And it's really tough to get... I was raised Catholic. You went to a Catholic high school.
And grade school.
And grade school. I didn't know that. Okay.
And law school.
Well, law school didn't necessarily... You didn't go to mass every day by requirement in law school, did you?
No.
In high school, you probably did.
Not every day, but we went pretty regularly.
Okay.
Grade school, we went pretty regularly.
I was a card-carrying Catholic, I'm still glad I was raised that way, but it's an organization that I'm having a hard time getting behind right now.
I'm not... Listen, I'm not behind it. I'm not behind the Catholic Church right now. I think the whole thing that happened in Pennsylvania, and I had removed myself from the church a while ago, and it was more because what I realized is, you know, people are people. Humans are humans. And a lot of humans and a lot of people hide behind religion. And you go to church thinking that, you know, and everyone's great on Sunday, right? They want to see pictures of your kids, and they want to talk to you about how things are going, and, you know, do you need a prayer, and we can get together, and blah, 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 and that's all great. But outside of church, a lot of these same people are the same people who will go on Facebook and spread just some of the most negative, hateful, derogatory information that you can come up with, right? Like, they're the same people who will, you know, just at the end of the day, they're just flat out mean, you know?
Right.
They will
bang the gavel of I'm a Christian.
I'm a Christian. But you're like, they're the most judgmental.
They're the most anti-Christian, un-Christian.
Right.
People
like
ever.
I mean, like they like it's the whole cast the first stone thing, and you know, I mean, these people are. And what's nuts is, you look at their situation. They got kids that are addicted to meth and heroin, that are, you know, killing people. You know, driving drunk and. And you know, like they cheat on their wives, and their wives are addicted to opiates, all this other shit.
Oh my gosh!
Right? I mean, they just got they got a mess of shit going on, but they'll sit there and bang the gavel for Trump, and they'll throw some racist meme up or some, you know, very mean spirit. They say mean spirited things to people behind their back and or in front of their face or whatever, and. To me, that's not being a Christian.
It is not at all.
Right? Like, that's not being a Christian. Look, and I don't want to get into what Christianity means to me and everything else. And I don't think that's what our audience wants to hear. But what I will say is, I shouldn't, when I walk into a church, you know, I shouldn't be focused on, God, you're such a liar. God, you're such a backstabber. Why are you such a judgmental bitch? You know what I mean? Like, going through all that, and that's when
well, but in this particular case, we're talking about like sexual assault of children.
Well, I mean, that's just I mean, that's
a next
what,
level disturbing.
So,
thing.
What I was talking about was the reason why I stepped back from the church. This whole thing with what happened in Pennsylvania, with the number of priests that were involved in, you know, just basically raping and ruining children's lives. And there's a new story every day that comes out of the Vatican or some other diocese somewhere. It's at a point where how can I? Why would I stand behind this organization? Why would I stand behind this group of people? Why would I support them or that when all of my fears and all of the things that have given me bad feelings, bad vibes, red flags, whatever you want to call it, are all being verified and basically
amplified,
right? I mean, it's just like it's not only bad, it's worse than what I thought it could have been. So
now, I was an altar boy and nothing ever happened to me
that you can remember.
No,
that you haven't blocked out.
No, my punchline, if I was going to go blue comic, is what was wrong with me? But no, it's horrible. Thank you. But anyway, it was a weird conversation with my cousin and I because we talked about this, and I'm like, you know, he's got three kids and he's all about the church, and I'm, like I said, I was best man at his wedding. I love the guy, I love his family, I love his kids. I'm godfather to one of his kids, but I'm really hurt, and I'm done. I'm for now. I'm not saying I would ever wander back. I might, but right now, I see more damage in that religion, in religion in general, and just what.
Well, because people, they hide behind it.
Yeah, they hide behind it.
We as humans, we use it as a shield. We use it as a way to hide behind. It's you can do whatever you want to do Monday through Saturday, and it's all okay as long as you go to church on Sunday.
Right.
Right, like, oh, I'm feeling guilty about doing what I did on Wednesday. I'm feeling guilty about firing Sheila for her shirt being too tight or because she's cuter than me, or I feel guilty about fucking...
Well, fuck Sheila. She deserved it.
I feel guilty about fucking Sam's wife or whatever, so... but I want to go to church on Sunday. And that's going to clear all my sins. Like, that's the attitude. Mantra. That's the mantra. And frankly, it's like, you know what? Fuck it, man. You know, I'm going to keep the Bible near and dear to my heart because I, you know, the Bible, I learned to read from the Bible. Right? My grandmother would read me verses from the Bible, and then she would make me read them back to her. And I wasn't reading. I just memorized it because she made me. But that's how I learned to speak. That's how I learned to process information. That's how I learned to kind of think logically. And so I will always hold it near and dear. I have a Bible for my daughter that I read to her. And I want her to have that same experience that I had from a learning perspective. But I'm not raising my daughter in the Catholic Church, and that's just, it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. No, she's been baptized as a Catholic, but, you know, in terms of going to Catholic school and all that stuff and being, there's, no, not going to happen. Sorry.
No, don't apologize.
I'll figure something out.
I'm in a bad spot, just with the whole thing. I'm in a bad spot.
You know what?
What?
Me and you should start a church.
We should. We get tax exemptions. Scientology too, bitches.
No, not even Scientology. I mean,
Steventology.
Oh,
I'll go. Yeah. I'll do this. I will do this.
All right. And oh my God, this is the best part. Communion. Communion's with whiskey. Communion's with whiskey and pizza.
The body of Steve is transported to this shot of whiskey.
Or boneless chicken wings.
Boneless wings are awful compared to the real thing.
It's great. I can eat them in big old hunks of protein. That's how I look at
they
it.
They are that. And
Big old hunks of protein dipped in barbecue or hot sauce or hot garlic parm.
I went that way a couple nights ago. All right, let's jump tracks. So real quick, just to beat up Trump a bit more, because he took so much pride in the fact that so much good happened in Puerto Rico. 3,000 fucking people died. It was reported as 64. It's nearly 3,000.
So let's kind of mesh this out a little bit. So initially, when Trump was there, the only number they had was 64. Like there were 64 confirmed.
There was 16 people. When he was there at one point. But
I think when he was there it was 64, right? And he made the whole statement. Well, it was only 64, 65 people that died, and you know, Hurricane Katrina took out, you know,
hundreds and hundreds were
right, hundreds and hundreds of people, and so this is getting the necessary amount of attention
right.
that it is. Now, this report that came out tracked people who died, like not only during the storm, but died because of, you know, long-term impact of the storm.
Lack of electricity.
Right, and they didn't have electricity there for 8 months. Right?
Some places probably still don't.
I think they're back. I think they're at like 80%. Of places that had electricity now have it back.
Which is still a bad
which
number,
still
right?
Sucks. Yes, you're right. I'm just saying that there's some semblance of normalcy there now. But we're literally at a year since it happened. Guess what? Hurricane season's coming back.
Yep.
And you can only pray that they don't get hit again so it doesn't compound the situation. And there's no guarantee. And the way the hurricane season has been going, severe concerns that they're going to end up in a bad place again in a real short amount of time. But, you know, the survey that came out, you know, tracked it from people who died because of the storm directly, you know, within the week that the storm happened or the week or month, and then they tracked it all the way until, you know, a few months ago where the reason why they died was because there was no electricity or because they didn't have access to doctors or medical or whatever.
Right.
You know, they were living in filth and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And that number ends up coming to 3,000 people. And there's no, we hear nothing from the White House on this. Right? I mean, they have no comment. There's nothing. And I guess the question is, well, what can they say? Well, the problem is that Trump comes out in the beginning and says, oh, well, only 65 people died and Katrina killed so many more people, so this is
a minor tragedy.
Right, like this is no big deal. You guys are making a big deal about nothing. We're killing it. I'm going to throw some paper towels at people and we're done.
One of the most awkward things ever.
Right? I mean, like that's the fucked up part about this is because he already said something, you know, basically trying to minimize what had happened there. And But the number of people that were moving off that island, the fact that they didn't have electricity for the amount of time that they did, right? Like, as soon as it was, you know, a month,
can you imagine living a month of electricity?
No, I can't.
I can't either.
I can't. I've thought about that.
First world problem.
Listen, I've thought about that. Nah, I mean, I don't necessarily know if that's a first world problem. I feel like that's second world problem. I don't know. Are there levels to the level of world problem? Either way, but what I'm saying is I couldn't imagine it. And the idea that we're minimizing the fact that this entire island was basically wiped out.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this island was wiped out. And they're American citizens.
Yes.
They're American citizens. And their best option was, all right, just, I mean, come to the United States and, you know, screw the place that you've grown up for the last...
Come to the mainland, right? They're part of the United States, but...
I mean, I couldn't imagine it. I can't imagine it for those people. I have plenty of friends that are Puerto Rican. Their families are just the stories that they tell, whether they've been there or they've talked to families... You can't, like, when you hear it, you're like, this is happening here in the United
States. In 2018. In 2018.
Yep. How? How can this fucking be? Right? We're the biggest and the best, and Trump is making America great again.
Right.
Right? Like, so what are you doing? Right? Like, how? You want to sit there, people want to say, oh, he's not right. Okay, well, then go fucking, like, why would you, like, first of all, the tourism in Puerto Rico. Just the visual, like everything that island is, it's not perfect. And yeah, it wasn't ran great. There's an opportunity for them to basically start over and get some things right. So let's do that. But we should be there in full force trying to get them back right instead of worrying about which contractor is going to get rich off the job of whatever government, you know, bureaucrat whose son has a fucking construction company. You know,
it is clearly the largest U.S. presence in the Caribbean, which has, I mean, the beaches in Puerto Rico are fucking amazing. I've been there once. It is beautiful. But and I've got a lot of friends who are from there and, you know, go there regularly. The fact that this got underreported is disappointing, to be kind.
Underreported, and they haven't been supported. As an island, I don't feel that they've gotten the proper support.
I'm sure they feel the same way.
And that's the part. That's the biggest letdown of all this. It's just the biggest letdown. I feel like
Americans got left.
Yeah, I mean, yep. I just
Puerto Ricans are Americans.
Let's get that straight. I just feel like we have, as a country, we have let them down. We've let down our fellow Americans, and it just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. I don't know how we fix it. I know it's not an easy problem, and none of these problems are easy.
And they're expensive,
right?
And they're...
Right, they are expensive, but I just feel like a lot of the solutions that our current regime, government, president are offering are just, well, I mean, that's a big, hard problem, and we've got other problems that I'd rather pay attention to, so I'm going to deal with those. Screw this, screw that. You know, yeah. I mean, screw Puerto Rico.
Yeah, well, that feels...
You know, that's
and I'm sure the people there feel like we're understating it.
Right. I can't state it enough because I'm not from there. I don't have family there. I don't have enough skin in the game to articulate this the way that it's supposed to be stated. But I feel terrible. And I wish as a country we could do more to get this right faster.
And just to get the truth out there.
Right. But getting the truth out there, that matters because maybe it could help generate help and whatever. But what needs to happen, like, they need help. They need crews. They need food. They need people there working on the infrastructure, getting it right so this shit doesn't happen again. Yes. You know, instead of having power lines above ground, they need all that shit, fiber optics running underground.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Like, that's like you need all that stuff. And maybe it's happening, and maybe it's just happening at the best pace that it can, and it's just not fast enough for us or them, and we're impatient, first world problems, and we're trying to figure it out, so maybe that is happening, but I don't feel like it is, you know?
I'm sure if I was there, I would be fuming mad. Hopefully you're listening to this, and we're...
So the last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll jump into another episode to talk a little NFL preview. Right,
NFL season
little
is back.
special record, a little special recordation of our NFL thoughts. But the last thing we'll talk about here is Ray Oliver and Jordan Edwards. Ray Oliver is a police officer in Dallas.
Ray or Roy?
Oh, Roy. Sorry.
I wrote it badly.
Roy Oliver, police officer out of Dallas, Texas, who shot into a car that was driving away. So what happened, there was a party. Police were called because of noise. And a group of guys were there, a brother, his younger brother, a couple friends. As soon as they heard the police were called, they said, all right, man, we got to get out of here. They leave, they get in their car, and they drive away. The police pull up to the place very aggressively, hop out, see the car leaving because there were gunshots like down the street. And so the police see the car leaving, and the officer, Roy Oliver, who ends up shooting into the car, is attributing the shots that he heard, you know, a couple blocks away to this car, shoots into this car as it's moving away from him, and ends up killing Jordan Edwards, and I think he hit one of the other passengers, and he ended up being found guilty of, I believe...
Was it manslaughter or was it murder?
I think it was manslaughter. This case went the way it was supposed to go. The expert witnesses came up and said he had no reason to be firing into the car, right? Like the shots that were fired, the time between the two, there was a very elapsed amount of time that happened between the shots going off and this car driving, where it didn't make sense to connect the two. The car was going away from the officer, and no other officer was in danger. The police officer, Roy Oliver, said, well, the car was going towards my partner or my fellow officer, and I thought he was in danger. But that officer wasn't compelled to shoot. And that officer also said, at no point in time did I ever think my life was in danger. I don't understand why Officer Oliver shot into the car. Right, which that's pretty damning,
yeah.
You know, testimony, and I mean that's something that you don't typically see, you know, in these, you know, Blue Lives Matter type cases, in these police cases where, you know, I mean the thin blue line, the police take care of the police, but this one they're saying like, listen, bro, you just, I don't know what your deal was, like
let the bullets fly, you shouldn't have, and now you're paying the price,
right?
And I don't take any pleasure in Roy Oliver going to jail,
no,
none. But I also do take comfort in the thought that this officer was held responsible for actions that if a citizen had done them, they would be
treated. That's the entire point of the whole Black Lives Matter movement.
Yes.
Right? Like the group, the organization itself, I think I have my issues with. There's some things that they push and that they promote that I don't necessarily find myself aligned with. But the whole point of the organization initially, and in spirit, is we get that that no one's perfect, whether it's police or citizens or criminals. We get that. But if the police officer does something wrong to a citizen, even if that citizen is guilty of a crime,
you can't... It doesn't give carte blanche to the police.
It doesn't give carte blanche to the police to murder that citizen in the streets, right? If you're a kid who is guilty of robbing a convenience store for Skittles and an iced tea, that doesn't give the police a reason to shoot you and kill you, right? Like that's the point. Like you know what, you should go to you should be arrested and you should whatever the penalty is for stealing Skittles and an iced tea, that should be your penalty, not death.
Right.
You know, if you're...
If you're the police officer, you shouldn't have the, well, I felt like I might have been in danger, so I'm scared. Well,
yeah,
so
but I mean, you know, if you've got a busted taillight and you get pulled over or you're speeding, the penalty is a ticket, not death, right? Like, and just because someone isn't nice to you or
you're,
they...
You're going Sandra Bland here, which is my...
Or any... Right.
Well, that's the one that hits me the hardest because that was the most...
Right,
egregious.
I mean, just like just because someone isn't nice to you, doesn't give you the right to say to beat them, arrest them, and then somehow that person ends up dead. Right? I mean, the whole point is, there's got to be. we've talked about this in the past, but the whole idea of, you know, justice should go both ways, right? If you want, if someone breaks into your house, you want that person caught,
yes, right?
If someone, you know, steals your purse, you want that person caught, right? If a police officer kills your son and your son didn't do anything worthy of being killed other than because it was black, he was dark, and he was doing something sketchy, but it wasn't something that would have garnered him. Like, if it wouldn't have gotten him the death penalty if he was found guilty by a jury, then the police officer shouldn't have fucking killed him, right? And those are the, and that's the basic premise of Black Lives Matter, right? Like, listen, you got an asshole who robs a convenience store or does something stupid and commits a crime, then arrest him, take him to jail, and let him go through the system, right? Don't just murder him in the streets just because it's easier to do. That's the whole premise. That's the whole point, right? And in this particular situation, in this instance, Roy Oliver and Jordan Edwards, you have a situation where you got justice. And no one's happy. No one's...
Right.
That family doesn't get their child back. His brother doesn't get his brother back. They're not happy, right? Like, there's a little bit of, yay, we got justice, but our son, brother, friend is still gone and still dead, right? And that guy, right, Roy Oliver, is in jail. And his family, wife, kids, parents, brother, they lost him to prison for however long that he's going to be away for, right? Like, so there's no winners here. This isn't a victory.
Agreed.
But this is just but it is how it works.
A step in the right direction in terms of holding authorities or the authority accountable for their actions.
Yes.
All right, Stephen.
James,
let's lighten it up. Let's talk some football.
Well, let's
are you ready for some football? What do you want to do?
Why'd you have to bring that guy into it?
Are you ready? Oh, I wasn't thinking, but yeah, I did.
Microaggression.
Are you ready for
that's a micro. That's a microaggression
against
me.
Hank Williams Jr.
Yes.
Who?
I'm offended.
I'm sure.
All right, let's shut this down. We'll do an NFL preview show after this. Thank you for listening. You can catch us on all social media at whiskeycongress. Check out our website at whiskeycongress.com. And we will talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right, so we're doing football after this?
Yeah.
All right, sounds good.